This is the Rocky Mountain Review web episode for September 24th. I'm Maximus Hunter.
And I'm Ren Wadsworth. And today we will be interviewing Kelly Belknap with Adventurous Backpack, as well as Rabbi Gorelick, who is involved with the Jewish Student Union and Jewish student leaders on campus.
After that, we're going to have some news reports from our local reporter, Coda Babcock, as well as our sports reporter, Dixon Lawson, and a roundtable about Fort Collins lifting the topless ban for young women. We've got that and a bunch more.
Only here on the Rocky Mountain Review.
We are here with Kelly. And Kelly, thank you so much for taking the time. You're a CSU graduate, but after you left CSU, you did something pretty amazing. Would you mind telling us about what you did after you left CSU?
So yeah, I graduated CSU in 2014, and then my now wife and I started Adventurous Backpack Company. So we're a company that designs minimalist backpacks for travel, and for every backpack sold, we provide 25 meals to families in need across the U.S.
That's awesome. And you did that right out from coming out of CSU, like within a couple of years?
Yeah, exactly. It was about 2 years after graduating.
Wow.
What was your inspiration to do that?
So basically, my wife is from Sweden, so we travel back and forth to Europe a lot to visit her family, and so we need a good backpack always. And so basically, we noticed that the backpack industry has super high markups in general, same with like bags and purses and everything like that. And so we wanted to make a high-quality, affordable, and fashionable backpack that was under $100.
And you succeeded, it sounds like.
Well, we hope so.
Right on. So I know you have a partnership with Rams Against Hunger. Could you tell us a little bit about what you're doing with them?
Yeah, so we recently partnered up with Rams Against Hunger, the program at CSU, which helps provide meals to food insecure students. So a recent statistic that I learned from the Harvard Review is actually that one out of every five college students is food insecure, not knowing where their next meal is going to come from. So while, you know, there are people in the dorms that are heading down to the dining halls, there's some people that don't know where they're going to eat next. And so basically, we wanted to partner with CSU, obviously, because I'm an alum, but also to fight against hunger within students. And so we help to provide from each backpack sale food swipes, and also money goes to a mobile food pantry on campus to help feed food insecure students.
Okay, and can you buy the backpacks on campus directly?
Yeah, you can. So we have them for sale at the CSU bookstore right in the Laurie Student Center.
Oh, very cool. So I guess another question would be, what has been some of the struggles that you've dealt with during this?
So definitely finding a good partner and able to, in order to provide meals, obviously, starting a business and doing nonprofit work is are two completely different things. So while we had the entrepreneurial, you know, drive to start a company, we didn't know so much about the nonprofit side of things. So what we decided to do in partnering up with Feeding America, we wanted to do that because they had already the infrastructure in place to help provide meals. And that way they could take care of providing meals in the best way possible, in ways that we couldn't at the time that we started.
And how long have you been doing this for?
So we've been doing this for just over 2 years. We started in September of 2017.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about it, Kelly.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And so if people are interested in donating or buying one of these backpacks, where can they find more information about it?
Yeah, so if anyone would like any more information on the backpacks and the mission, you can always check out our website, www.adventuristbackpacks.com. And you can also go check them out in the LSC at the bookstore.
All right. And is there anything you want to add about this?
Not anything I can think of right now, but just be aware that your fellow students might not have it as well as you, and, you know, always lend a helping hand. That's my best advice I can give.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that.
All right. Thank you, guys.
That was Kelly from Adventurous Backpack. Up next, we are going to go on a break, but first, we've got Dixon with sports.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thank you.
There we go.
We're going to start out with the number 22 ranked volleyball, as they had a tough 3-game back-to-back last week in which they were able to go 3-0. Starting on Wednesday night, they played the University of Northern Colorado, UNC. The Bears were able to test CSU, going deep into each set, although still losing in three sets. Thursday night had Cal Poly come to Moby Arena, where the Rams took a commanding win in three sets once again. And then finally on Friday, we played Oregon State. They were the first team to actually win a set in Moby Arena in the three-game span, but they still came up short, losing 3-1. The volleyball wraps up this homestand Thursday night against New Mexico, and then we'll travel to UNLV for a matchup on Saturday. The football team had a shootout in Canvas Stadium Saturday night, losing 35-41. In Patrick O'Brien's first start, he went 32-52 through the air for 405 yards, having a touchdown and interception as well. Kinsey Jr. was an animal on the ground. He had 246 yards and two scores. The football team will head back on the road next Saturday to face Utah State. And if anyone does want to catch any of the action live from Moby Arena on Thursday, be sure to tune in at 7. 290.5 KCSU FM Fort Collins. And if you want to go to the game, be sure to tune in tonight to my show 7-9 for a chance to win four sets of tickets.
Absolutely. I'll have to look out for Kinsey Jr. That is a lot of yardage.
You know, it's
a lot.
He ate it, just tore it up on the ground. He was an animal.
Sounds like
oh
it.
Oh my gosh. That game, I just have to say, that ending was probably the most heartbreaking thing that's ever happened.
You know, I don't know if you guys have a second. I had a kind of cool story from the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for that game, you know, during the last 5 minutes with our press passes, we're allowed to go down to the field. So for that last drive, me and Sean Garber, we were on the field and we started on the 25. It was me and Zay and him. We saw him do the deep bomb, so we went running down the other side of the field, and we were right there in case they would have scored. We almost saw the game-winning touchdown. We were that close.
That's awesome.
Close. Yeah, I have to say I and probably other Rams felt just a state of shock that they did not go into overtime, that there was no redemption.
It was 1 in the morning, though, so
that's true.
I can't disagree with the call of let's head home, but right. I would have stayed. I was good to stay.
I was willing to.
Yeah.
I think I was asleep, but I would have stayed.
Hey, in your head, you're still rooting for us, right? You're having
yeah.
the
oh,
dreams.
Of course. I wouldn't root for any other teams.
Of course.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll have Rabbi Yermako Gorlick in to talk about some things that are upcoming on campus with ASCSU regarding last week's swastika on the wall incident in Aggie Village. So stay tuned for that one. And we are back on the Rocky Mountain Review. My name is Maximus Hunter.
And I'm Ren Wadsworth, and we are joined with some guests in the studio. If you guys would like to introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Yerachmiel Gorlick. I teach here on faculty with philosophy department and advise some of the Jewish student groups on campus.
Hi, I'm Denise Negrete-Peters. I'm president of Students for Holocaust Awareness on campus.
My name is Allison Ogle. I'm president of Sigma Alpha Epsilon Pi Jewish Sorority on campus.
Wow, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah.
For a little context for those listening who don't know, last week in, I believe it was Aggie Village, a swastika was found drawn on a wall. And much like the other recent incident of blackface, so the swastika is a hate symbol. And we want to do our part in the conversation of why people respond to these hate symbols and why these symbols are so powerful and get such reactions out of people. And so would you... would any of you mind giving our listeners who may not know a brief description of why the swastika is a hate symbol?
Well, it was taken to be used as something to represent the ethnic cleansing that was happening in 1930s and 40s in Western and Eastern Europe, and it was widespread, and it was largely, the ethnic cleansing itself was largely targeting Jews, as we know, but it was also targeting ethnic minorities, gender and sexual minorities, and those with disabilities as well. And so this is something that has a very violent history and is representative of this supremacy and this idea of like the perfect white race and the ideal society that they wanted to create in having this like ethnic cleansing.
Gotcha. So we had this happen here last week. Is this the first time a symbol like this has been found on campus, or have there been other incidents?
No, there's been a lot of other incidences. Basically, so I'm a fifth year, so I think my second year was when a Jewish girl like had a little whiteboard outside of her dorm room, and they like wrote horrible, nasty things about how she's Jewish because she wrote Happy Rosh Hashanah on it, which is a Jewish holiday, and people drew swastikas on it. And I think last year there was a replica dummy of a Nazi like found in a trash can outside of Moby. So it's definitely not the first time that this has happened on campus, which is really disappointing to say. Like, it, basically every year I've been here, it's happened, and so no, it's not the first time.
There was also an incident where a group of students were drawing swastika armbands on Snapchat and had...
Oh, they painted it on their arms, yeah.
Oh, they actually
painted it. Yeah, they actually painted it.
They sent out a Snapchat of it, that much I know, and they sent it, and that actually caused a lot of problems on campus as well. It was something that... the student body in terms of Jewish organizations had talked to Tony Frank about, and there was an attempt for restorative justice with that person, but this is also another time in which the swastika appeared on campus, yes.
So you're saying this has happened almost every year in the last few years?
Yeah, from what I can remember, since I started here August of 2015, and there was another incident. I can't remember exactly what they wrote, but somebody hacked the Durrell Wi-Fi and changed the Wi-Fi name to, like, F-Jews, basically. I think that's what it said. I can't remember if it was that or kill. But, yeah, so yes, it happens frequently, unfortunately.
And that's only the cases that are reported.
Yeah, you know, that's
which
true.
There's been a cultural shift in minority groups being a little more comfortable sharing the bias directed towards them. But I can tell you in my 15 mm-hmm. years here, there hasn't been a single Jewish student who hasn't experienced some sort of bias or anti-Semitic remark or, racism essentially directed towards that person. And I often get reported things as well, and even though I encourage them to take it up to the administration because it's important to be shared, in order, a lot of them just don't want to rock the boat or for whatever personal reasons don't want to revisit that trauma. So this is pretty much, this is far from typical, and sadly will probably be repeated as well.
That makes sense.
I know a lot of students were theorizing that this was inspired by the blackface incident, that it was just another, I hate to say, another rise in hate crime, but it sounds like you guys are saying this is a common occurrence on campus, correct?
Yeah, I think people really feel like it's okay, like that's okay here at CSU, and I think that's why it keeps happening, to be perfectly honest. I don't see any action happening towards... You know, and like a lot of people that do the swastikas are cowards. We don't know who did them, and so like can't really punish them. But CSU kind of, in my opinion, I feel like they have made it so people, maybe not students, whoever's doing it, but students feel okay doing this. So yeah, I think when one happens and they see they get away with it, they just want to keep pushing the boundary.
And I will say that it there's no coincidence that this incident happened after 2 weeks after the blackface incident, especially.
Right.
As the statement made was that the students couldn't face any actual tangible repercussions for their actions because of the free speech predicament. And so in my opinion, what I believe this is basically saying is like a we won and we are here type of thing, because really at the end of the day, despite the fact that the woman in the picture faced a lot of social repercussion and had lost her job, she's still able to attend the school,
right.
And she's not seeing tangible repercussions for her actions, and so that's something that speaks volumes to the community, especially those who believe that what she did was perfectly fine and socially acceptable and actually in the right. So,
another question I want to pose is, you brought up the swastikas being painted on arms and that being posted on Snapchat and how there wasn't a lot of action from Tony Frank, and I just wanted to point out how much that mirrors the situation that's happening right now. And I kind of wanted to pose a question of and get your opinion on how it makes you feel that didn't really get that much attention as opposed to this.
Well, Allison and I, together with quite a few students from the Jewish community here at CSU, had a 2-hour meeting with President McConnell. Perhaps, Allison, you'd like to address that, because these were all excellent questions that were posed to the president, and the students essentially, as one, wanted to see some substantial change, not just a focus on education, which really just focuses on the people not doing these things, but preventing by disciplining those that are doing these things. Allison, do you want to tell us about that meeting today?
Yeah, I would love to. So a lot of what we talked about is what CSU administration can and cannot do. So part of that is the legality of we are a public institution, and because of that, we are not able to expel or to really reprimand somebody for making these statements. However, what we can do is we can, like President McConnell had announced in her address to the during the president's picnic, that there is the race bias and equity initiative that's going on, and that she's doing outreach in starting that and to look for like tangible action items going forward, because obviously this is a problem that has been festering on campus and it's become this wound that's been infected, and now that this infection is coming into the blood and it's coming into the entire body of the student. And so it's something that we're like looking towards having action towards. Part of that also is addressing the concerns that it goes against the student code of conduct, but the student code of conduct is not legally binding. And so one of the things that we wanted to address, and then that we started to address in the meeting today, was finding ways to make it so that if there is a violation of student code of conduct, which both the blackface incident and the swastika being carved in the wall are violations, if these occur, then there are tangible actions by the administration that can be done in response. And so those are some things that we are looking at doing. And President McConnell is very interested in having us meet again and to keep this going, rather than have one event in which she hears our voices and then kind of like walks away. There is action being done, and we are looking at like how we're able to achieve those things.
That's good to hear, and I'm sure the students or our listeners are interested in hearing that. And we're going to come back to the kind of the administration side of this, but right now I'd like to pose a question to the rabbi, if I may. What kind of student responses have you been hearing to this incident? How have people been feeling of late? Because I know a lot of students, and not just Jewish students, but a lot of students in general, come to you for counsel and to talk.
Maybe you were in my class, Max.
Maybe I was last semester,
as well as you, Coda. Gosh, look at that! It's really nice to be able to interact with my former students in these capacities, because you would have heard the viewpoints of Judaism as we address things that are all too common to our culture and our people. You know, it's interesting. I mean, there's no question about it. Students are feeling scared and confused and unsafe and unwelcome. I mean, there's no denial of that. And we're trying to deal with those emotions. But as those that are familiar, Judaism's response to any sort of hardships and challenges has always been, okay, so what can you do now? You know, are you going to fall apart, or are you going to use this as an opportunity to grow? And indeed, while certainly identifying and encouraging and helping those who are going through those emotions and being there for them, at the same time, I've been encouraging them in the truly Jewish way to say, look, let's see if we can find a positive. Let's see if we can find a light out of this. And I think it's quite obvious. The fact that it's happening is terrible. Nobody wants it to happen. Once it's happening and a student gets faced with this, all of a sudden, now they've got to look inwards and see, gosh, there's a lot of fuss made of my Jewish identity. A lot of people hate me simply because I'm Jewish and they don't even know who I am. I need to understand my identity a little bit better. Where does this all come from? So in a way, it pushes students to look at themselves a little bit better, look at who they are and who they represent. And if ultimately from that can come a stronger identity and a greater sense of pride, well, that's probably the best answer to anti-Semitism. If Jewish students are being told, we hate you, we want to do this to you, stand up, be strong, be proud about who you are, embrace those things. And I've seen that. I've seen an incredible rekindling of interest by people who I didn't even know existed out here in the community. And this is not just on a student level. This is happening on a community level. Let's not kid ourselves. This is representing a trend throughout the country as well as throughout the world. And so I've seen people in the community sort of step forward as well and say, listen, I want to get involved. This is making me speak up. Celebrities who we didn't even know were Jewish are speaking up and saying enough is enough. So if you like, Judaism is looking at it, I think, in a positive way, and I think the students are taking it really in a good way. So while they're troubled and while they're having a hard time, I think ultimately they're going stronger and they'll be better off for this experience. So those people doing these naughty things, you're never going to win.
That leads perfectly actually into the next thing I wanted to ask you is, so for people who may not have been lucky enough to hear that advice from you, or for people who are feeling troubled, are feeling challenged by this, what kind of resources are there for them?
That's a fantastic question. There's obviously many resources that the university offers, and it's usually listed after those long emails that they send out. There's the Wellness Center. There's all sorts of support there. I consider myself a support and happy to talk to anyone, not just of the Jewish faith. There's a number of Jewish organizations here on campus that would be there for anyone who wanted to experience this. And we've had an outpouring of support from people that are not part of the Jewish community. There's two Jewish student organizations, Chabad and Hillel, and then there's a Jewish sorority, SAEPI, and a Jewish fraternity, AEPI. And they've really stepped up. And come Wednesday, we're encouraging everyone to join the dialogue that we're going to have at ACC. How do you keep these headphones on, for goodness sake?
I suggest keeping one over the side of your ear.
Oh, is that the way it is? Like DJ style. Okay. And I think that's going to be a real opportunity for people to be able to express themselves and discuss that. And we want to hear from students. And I think it'll be an event of unity as well. So I encourage everyone to reach out to those that they feel comfortable with and that they can get a bit of support. You know, I want to tell you something interesting. I was leaving the LSE last night. We had our weekly Holocaust Awareness Week planning meeting, and there was a gentleman there leaving the building, and I held the door open for him, so he had to hold the door open for me. And he looked a little bit troubled, and I turned around to him and I said, "Do you have a good day?" And he said, "No, I didn't." So I said, "Do you want to talk about it?" And I've never met him before, right? And we had a little bit of a chat. He also is a minority group, and he's been made fun of, and comments that were very hurtful. And we had a little chat. I said, "Look, I can't pretend to be in your shoes, but as someone Jewish, I can certainly identify with being on the short end of the stick." And we talked about some of the, you know, the Jewish wisdom associated with that, and we shook hands, and that was that. And so I tell people that, you know, a lot of people struggle. Well, I can't change the world. I can't change the tide of this country, the tide of the world. So they go back to their own little corner and focus inward. And I say, well, it's not true. We're living in humanity now. Everybody's struggling. Everyone's got some pain. And you could just stop for 5 minutes, for 1 minute, and whether it's a smile or a little bit of a chat, and you could lift up somebody else's day. Light has a terrific way of just continuing to grow. You know, you light one candle, you can light 5,000 with that. So if we all just did a little bit of that every day, by definition, we can make it a better place and make the world a little bit brighter for everyone.
Wow.
Go ahead.
You mentioned the ASCSU meeting. And I was just wondering if you could explain to me a little more about what's going on tomorrow.
So ACSU is really a wonderful organization. We've collaborated with them. I think they're really genuinely motivated to help student life over here. And I had there was a reach out on both ends, and they essentially invited the Jewish community to express themselves, and they committed to passing several resolutions in terms of both condemning and pushing the university into some sort of appropriate action. So really they're there to support the Jewish community like they were there the other week to support the black student organizations. And so that's what we're doing. You know, come Wednesday, we hope to be able to create a voice, and through that, again, to snowball hopefully into some changes here. And slowly but surely, we can lift and change this culture and this climate. That's the hope. So we encourage everyone to show up and share your piece. It doesn't just have to be Jewish students, but come and show your support for the Jewish community, and really for anyone who's got a decent, who's just a decent human being should be bothered by all this, and to come in and say enough is enough. Let's make this a kinder place.
If there was to be like a tangible goal that could, you know, some kind of resolution that could come out of working with ASCSU, what would you like to see?
I'm hearing from the students one simple thing. I know that everyone in administration is well-intentioned and has been, but at the end of the day, students, and that's what they said today, I heard it over and over, right, Alison? They're just tired of hearing, "We condemn it, we're with you, our thoughts and prayers are with you, we feel for you, this is not the place for that." Well, that's nice, and that's what my grandmother can tell me, right? But at the end of the day, kids want to see, so what are you doing about it? And I understand there are challenges of free speech and law, etc., but come what may, you have to be here for the students. You've got to figure it out. See, you can't just say, "We're there for you and we'll support you, but our hands are tied." Figure it out. That's what you got lawyers for. That's what you got a team for. Find a way of making it work, but your priority must be for the students. So I would like to see it get better for the students, for all students over here. And the only way is that they have to come up with some real measurable action. that primarily focuses on preventing these things from happening, which means not giving a free pass to the kids that are doing this, figuring it out who it is, and pursuing it in such a way that the next person will think twice before they do it. We all know diversity training, bigots and racists aren't going to show up to that. So, I mean, like, who are we kidding? They're not taking that. They're laughing, right, when that's being offered. If they can do that and the ACCU will come up with a resolution and that helps in this long journey, then that's what we're hopeful for. That's truly what we're hopeful for. And if I may say so, you know, we're all very impressed with President McConnell. She seems very motivated. She's onto this. She sent me a personal email telling me that, Rabbi, I will not stand for anti-Semitism over here. So she's made that very clear, and she's got 1,000 other things to do, right? So let's see what happens, and we'll give them a chance. And they're new, and see where it goes. But we're all hoping for a better future.
Absolutely. And I think that echoes a lot of what we heard last week, talking about the blackface incident and the work with the administration, ASCSU. And I think that it's very apparent that there's something going on campus in regards to speech and freedom of speech and how that's evolving in the modern day, and groups that don't want to be ignored. And that, I think we're seeing a really powerful change, potentially.
So, Rabbi, you said you were going to be at the ACSU meeting.
Yes.
And I don't know if our other two guests are going to be there as well.
Yeah, we're both going to be there.
Yep. All right. And I just wanted some clarification for if students wanted to get interested and get involved and be present at that, where and when will that ASCSU meeting be tomorrow?
It's in the Senate chambers at 8 p.m.? 6 p.m. Sorry, 6 p.m. tomorrow in the Senate chambers, which is right near the LSE Theater in the LSE.
I think it's open for public comment at 6:30.
Yeah, and I would encourage everyone to come. Sorry, I'm kind of stealing the mic right now. But, you know, like Allison was saying, the swastika, it's not just about Jewish people. Like, it's about all minorities, like Black people, Hispanic people, like Asian people, disabled people, mentally ill people. Like, it's not just about Jews. It's about hatred for basically anyone that didn't follow that certain ideal, which is very long and tired and old. You know, like, everyone should be hurt by this. Like, even people that, like, maybe, you know, back in the day they followed that perfect mold or whatever, like, it's still extremely dehumanizing to have a symbol like that, because it's basically saying, we don't want you here, you're not human. And so I would like to see everyone, like, all sorts of people there, because it's really like it's a warning, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. More than anything.
And if this might be, well, it's not really off topic, but you know what came up at the meeting was that, do Jewish students have a voice here on campus? And while the four organizations are quite active, the reality is that for many, they can go by a year or two and not even realize it's a Jewish community. There's no office on campus, and I know President McConnell was very receptive to the idea of the students of creating some sort of space for that. But the truth is, we do know that out there are probably a lot of Jewish students who might be feeling a little bit lonely. A little bit out of place. It's coming up to the high, you know, holidays, the new year here, and they're probably thinking, where am I going to go? At home, I would celebrate with my family. Where am I going to go? So I'd like to share with everyone out there, whoever would like to come. We're hosting a big community Rosh Hashanah dinner at the Senior Center on Sunday, this Sunday, September 29 at 6 p.m. If you could RSVP, that would be absolutely wonderful. JewishCSU.com/RHdinner. And I'm sure, Max, you guys could send out a link. But don't feel that you're on your own. We're there for you, and we want to be that family that you may be looking for. And if you just need to talk, you can reach out to me, you can reach out to any of the organizations, but there are people here for you, and things are going to change.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Rabbi. We're about to go on a break, but before we go, any final thoughts from any of our guests?
No, you can go.
Oh, okay. I know we said this before, but I really would like to reiterate the idea that any type of threat to any minority community on campus is a threat to all minority communities on campus. And I believe this is true for the blackface incident. I believe this is true for the noose that showed up in Newsom Hall, and I believe this is true for all the swastikas that are being drawn. And although the ASCSU meeting is focusing on anti-Semitism, it is all-encompassing of this idea of white supremacy that needs to not exist anymore. Generally.
Yeah, and I guess I just would like to, if anyone's interested in Holocaust Awareness Week, it's not necessarily a Jewish
organization, but we do a lot of like awareness, and we do the Field of Flags, which have different like categories of people that passed. But if anyone's interested in helping out with that, we meet every Wednesday in the LSC Common Lounge. Also, like what Rabbi was saying, like you're not alone. Like I know it feels really bad right now to be any kind of minority, and you're never alone. Like there's always going to be people there for you, and like just know that people care about you, and yeah, and like you are more than whatever they're trying to make us be. Like they're just, I just feel like the symbol is kind of trying to tell us to like go away and stop existing, and that's not what we're gonna do.
Never, never. And if you're wondering how you can get involved, and you're sitting back with sympathy but not sure, just go out there and bring a smile to someone's face. Just do one little candle every day. If we all do that,
I think that's a wonderful place to end. Thank you so much, Rabbi, and thank you so much for coming and joining us today.
We're going to take a break, but after the break, we're going to have an interview with Haneen Badri, one of the founders of the Instagram page, Not Proud to Be a CSU Ram. So stay tuned for that.
Maybe from there.
And we are back on the Rocky Mountain Review. I'm Max Hunter.
And I'm Ren Wadsworth. And we are here with our wonderful reporter,
Coda Babcock.
Ooh, a little jinx there.
So, listeners, I know we said Haneen Badri would be coming in next, but unfortunately, Haneen has had something come up in Denver and is unable to come in for her interview today. But we will be trying to get Haneen in at a future date. We still would really like to cover what went down between ASCSU and hashtag
not proud to be a CSU Ram.
So we will be talking about that. Just unfortunately, it will not be today. But we would very much like to thank Rabbi Gorelick for coming in and talking with us and the students he brought. That was really, I think, powerful to hear. From more people who have been impacted by these incidents on campus. But we are going to go into some local news with our wonderful reporter, Coda Babcock. So take it away, Coda.
Hi again, I'm Coda Babcock, and this is your local news for Tuesday, September 24th. Okay, so we're starting out. Erin Udell from the Fort Collins, Colorado, reported yesterday that Wingstop will be opening a new location in Old Town. The Dallas-based restaurant will be a new tenant at the Exchange. In a 1,700 square foot space. Wingstop will be the first restaurant in the Exchange to be centered around wings, and the Exchange is located at 200 North College Avenue for anyone who wants to check it out. Poudre School District has also put vaping on its radar recently because of national news reporting vaping-related illnesses. While Northern Colorado has not currently faced any issues from vaping-related illnesses, in 2017, it was reported that 30.8% of students of Poudre School District self-reported e-cigarette use, about 3% higher than the state average of 27% and significantly greater than the 11.7% national average. Last year, 65% of students reported vaping also reported that they were interested in stopping or cutting back on use. Poudre School District is currently working to prevent more students from vaping and nicotine use while also trying to help those students that are seeking recovery in doing so. Counselors are working to educate students and their families about the dangers of using addictive substances, including nicotine, and have even started emphasizing the information in presentations for freshmen. The school district has previously hosted sessions similar for families and plans to do so again. Drake Road will also be facing a full-day closure this weekend on Saturday, September 28th, just west of McClellan Drive. The closure is necessary to replace temporary asphalt and is scheduled to begin at 5 a.m. and reopen by 5 p.m. the same day. Business access will be maintained throughout the closure. J.C. Marmaduke at the Fort Collins, Colorado, reported earlier that Fort Collins Utilities and Fort Collins Loveland Water District, the city's two primary water providers, will be working to expand water conservation programs. Outdoor water use, and specifically lawn watering, accounts for nearly two-thirds of the average residents' household water use. Due to Fort Collins' increasing population and our fairly dry end of summer, the city is facing a dilemma when it comes to making sure that there's enough water available for residents and business owners alike. That was your local news for Tuesday. I'm Coda Babcock again, and you're listening to the Rocky Mountain Review on KCSU 90.5 FM.
Thank you, Coda.
All right, so we're going to go straight into our roundtable. So our roundtable is about the prohibition on public exposure of breasts by women and girls over 10 years old is now gone from Fort Collins City Code as of this week. and kind of what that means and a little bit about that whole movement. So a little bit about this movement. It's part of the Free the Nipple movement that's kind of making a lot of traction in across the nation. One of the main points of this movement is that expecting women to wear shirts in public and men not to is a direct violation of the Constitution because it's effectively treating women and men differently.
It does seem kind of unfair, yeah.
Yeah, and another huge point about it is that a lot of people have this stigmatism about women's breasts being sexual objects, which they're not. By definition, breasts are not sexual objects.
Females, they're for feeding babies.
Right. Female nipples are not sexual. They're not more sexual than male nipples. Nothing like that. Some of the pushback of this, however, is that a lot of people were worried that women were going to be running around topless in front of like schools and in swimming areas. And that's actually what the article says, is that a lot of the politicians were really worried about public exposure with children. However, another pushback, main pushback of this being passed, is that it allows girls as young as 10 to be publicly exposed. But an argument against that, again, is that boys can be shirtless way younger than 10.
I mean, it's technically boys can be shirtless no matter what age they are.
Right.
I don't think anyone really cares. And it's interesting that they had such a specific age kind of cutoff for that one. And it makes me wonder kind of what kind of conversations went into making that the choice.
I can actually clarify a little if you want.
Oh, yeah, can you? That'd be awesome. Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's actually saying because previously it was girls under 10 could be shirtless, and that was the cutoff. They switched it so that girls of all ages and women of all ages can both.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So that's just a quick explanation.
Yeah, I thought that was a very specific age, too.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of strange.
Like, they do leave that out of the news articles a lot of the time and a lot of the press releases, which is a little bit difficult to figure out sometimes.
So I know a big part of this, and this has been a legal battle for a few years now, is a child activist. She was a 16-year-old, I believe. She was a trans woman. And really fought for this not to be just lifting the ban for adults, but for people of all ages, for real equality, as she put it. And I'd just like to pose the question to both of you. Do we feel that real equality is for everyone of all ages, or is it just for adults?
I think it's for everyone. And also, I think it gets kind of weird. Like, I thought it gets into this like weird territory when you like restrict younger people, which is what I thought this was originally, from not being able to do things, especially of this nature. Like, when initially I had thought this was saying that girls under 10 could not go topless, and that in itself I thought almost sexualized younger women. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think
so I'm
that
glad it's not that.
That's kind of how I was thinking about it, because I think that if we're arguing that it's not a sexual object, like breasts aren't sexual objects, and that's why it should be equal for men and women both, and non-binary people, of course, but generally all people to be able to go shirtless on hot days. I think if we're arguing that it's not sexual for women to do it specifically, we need to also accept the fact that young girls should be able to do it too, because if it's not sexual for them, it's definitely not sexual for like
a younger child.
13-year-olds, 10-year-olds, like, because the only reason that would be sexual is if you already have a gross kind of idea of those girls.
Right, and I think this is a hard thing for a lot of people to wrap their heads around, because it's so ingrained in our society that breasts are sexual, they're not meant to be shown, even going so far as to argue the whole breastfeeding in public, if that's okay, if that's not okay, when that's their purpose.
Yeah, I feel like I see more people upset about that than I do about men going to the bathroom outside. Which,
well, that's an interesting one, yeah, because not very many people are upset about that.
Even though that one actually is technically a crime, but people are much less upset about that idea compared to women just feeding their baby.
Right.
Well, and part of the pushback is you're right, is people do see breasts as sexual, and part of the pushback obviously against kids, you know, going topless is that that could be seen as such, not that it would be by the law, but that there's a risk of, you know, strangers seeing that as such, or random people who have, you know, bad boundaries taking that the wrong way. Do you think that could be a concern?
I think that those people, like, as you said, the people who already have issues with boundaries would have issues regardless.
Right.
I also think that we have years of, like, generally people as a whole have years of ingraining that they should dress modestly, especially women. So I don't think women are just, because a new law is passed, going to be suddenly comfortable right. doing it.
Well, it is kind of the whole showing your ankles thing that never, ended a civilization.
Say, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in 20, 40 years, however many it takes, because it's that same issue. Like, I mean, 100 years ago, men couldn't go out topless. 40 years ago, probably more than that, women couldn't wear shorts. It's that kind of thing that at that time it was so unrealistic for women to think, like, I could ever go out wearing pants, stuff like that.
Yeah, we actually got a text in Ooh. Just now about this. And the text says that the pushback are politicians. They think that people are going to be going out topless, but obviously that hasn't happened. And I have to say, I agree. I haven't seen that at all. So that in mind, this should just be a general rule now, is what our texting listener is saying. Time will tell that people will act and behave better as they see things that are taboo as not taboo. And I think that's a really awesome point. Thank you for texting that in. Because, yeah, there have been a lot of things in the past that we as society have thought were taboo that aren't anymore.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa, things that we thought were totally fine that, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, we're not totally fine. Smoking, vaping, great example.
Racism.
Vaping, racism, although I don't know if that was ever totally fine. But
I mean, in America.
Historically
in America, that's yes.
That's a whole nother episode we could do.
I think it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. And I think it's a great step towards true equality, not just women and men get paid the same, stuff like that. I think this is really a good step that equality is not supposed to feel comfortable.
And it doesn't just include economic, it also includes social at all aspects.
Right. Yeah, so. Equality and change, I should specify, are not supposed to feel comfortable. When your societal view shifts, it's not a comfortable feeling. And that's essentially what's happening, is we're asking people to stop thinking the way they have for their entire lives and think of things in a new
light. In a different way, and that can be challenging.
Right.
It's 100% true. We're going to take a quick break, but after that break, we're going to come back with our national days and wrap up the show in the way we've been wanting to do for two shows we couldn't last week, the weather.
The weather.
Yes, so stick around. We will be right back. And we are back on the Rocky Mountain Review. My name is Maximus Hunter, and I am joined in studio
by Ren Wadsworth,
my lovely co-director,
and Coda Babcock,
our lovely reporter.
Wow.
It's been a really fun show today. We talked to Rabbi Gorelick about last week's swastika incident, which admittedly is not as fun of a topic as I may have led people to believe when I said it was a fun day today, but it was a really
interesting day.
Productive conversation.
Very educational.
We had a few student leaders from the Jewish community in that conversation as well. If you missed that one, you can check it out on our website, 90.5 or kcsufm.com, or we will be rebroadcasting the Rocky Mountain Review tonight at 11 p.m. So if you missed that, you can hear it then. Also, feel free to check us out on, you know, our Facebook, KCSUFM, our Twitter, at KCSUFM, our Instagram, KCSUFM. We're doing we got a video of the conversation with the rabbi. We've got some live streams. We got lots of great content. So definitely check that out. And you know, feel free, always feel free to text us at 970-491-5278. That's 970-491-KCSU. We had someone text us during the last segment, and they added some great insight. So yeah, definitely, we love talking to you guys. We love hearing from you guys. So feel free to reach out to us in any of those. And if you would like to hear the interview with the rabbi, you can find it on our website, kcsufm.com. But Ren, I think you've got something to tell people about.
I do. I don't know if many of you know this, but today is actually September 25th.
Whoa.
Whoa. Is it September 25th?
No, it's September 24th.
I was so confused. I'm so sad.
I was like, wow, I really didn't know that.
I really didn't know that. Well, I don't know if you know this, but it's September 24th.
Wow.
Which is also National Energize Day. Energize Day comes after the fall equinox, and it's a day to sit back and relax. And this day promotes like self-help and give yourself some well-deserved me time, which I think as college students, a lot of us need to remember to do.
I haven't had time to myself in so long.
That is so sad.
That's how it is.
That is how it is. On that kind of same topic of self-indulgence, today is also Cherry's Jubilee Day, which is a popular dessert in the United Kingdom. The dessert features vanilla ice cream and poached cherries and syrup. A suggested way to eat this dessert is to order it before your meal at restaurants. So, sounds tasty. And then today, which is the fourth Tuesday in September, is also National Voter Registration Day, and this urges citizens to register to vote, as it says in the name. The day also encourages citizens in the United States to sign up and ensure that they are registered in their district, especially after a move or if they are new to voting. And Max, do you want to tell us a little bit more about the importance of voting?
Absolutely. So National Voter Registration Day is when it is because it is right before the deadline on an election year to register to vote. And kind of, you know, something I hear fairly often when I talk to people about voting is it doesn't really matter if I vote or not because, what am I going to do as one person? But in the recent past, most major elections have been decided by very, very, very small margins. So it really does make a difference whether or not you vote. So just because today is National Voter Registration Day, I wanted to bring that to people's attention. There are lots of resources available to help people register to vote. The easiest way is probably just to go onto the Colorado State Government website. And I know ballots, or at least ballot descriptions, just got sent out around neighborhoods. If you're interested, get involved. Voting can be a reward within itself. And that's my piece on that.
Max, do you feel that in the air?
Well, the winds are coming in from the south.
It feels like it's time for...
the weather! Well, the winds may actually have been coming from the south because temperatures are dropping slightly this whole week. Yes, you heard me, slightly. Tomorrow, it's going to be bright and sunny with a high of 79, and the temperatures are just going to jump a bit. On Thursday, with a high of 84 and a low of 51, that's a pretty big difference. So get ready for anything on Thursday. Friday might be the day the temperatures start dropping. But you'll have to tune in Thursday to find out for our next episode of the Rocky Mountain Review. It's going to be a great one on Thursday. I already know we've got someone coming in from the Fort Collins Book Festival. And they're going to tell us some great stuff. And maybe, fingers crossed, we'll even get Hanin to come on.
Mm-hmm. But that, unfortunately, is the end of our show.
Wait, it is?
It is.
Oh, my gosh. And we should thank some people.
We should thank some people. You know who we should thank first? Damian Castile, who made all of the music you heard today.
This Damian Castile?
This one?
That one. Wow, I love that. I love that so much. We also, of course, we absolutely have to thank Rabbi Gorlick and the two students he brought with him for coming in and talking to us today. It was really nice to hear your perspective. And like they said, if people are interested in joining the rabbi and the Jewish community speaking to ASCSU. They will be meeting tomorrow.
We have to thank Kelly from Adventurous Backpack Co. Thank you for coming in and having an interview with us.
Yes, that was very interesting to learn about, and their partnership with Rams Against Hunger is it's really awesome to hear a CSU alumni coming back and working with the institutions we already have on campus. We got to thank Coda.
Coda.
Hello.
Coda. Thank you, Coda, for doing all you do, and Dixon. We gotta, gotta thank Hannah, of course.
Gotta thank Julia and Zay.
Julia and Zay. Peter Wack,
I have to thank Max.
Oh, gosh.
I could not do this show without him, and I love doing this show with him.
I gotta thank you too, Ren, because, yeah, no, I wouldn't be able to do this, without you either. And I'd like to propose a new one. I'd like to thank really everyone at the station who helps us, because there's a bunch of people, but also... We have to thank you, listeners.
That time.
I know, and we missed the end of the song, but we still have a minute left, so let's spend this whole minute thanking everyone wonderful who listens to us, everyone who walks by the big window and waves at us or smiles or, you know, does something, anything to get our attention. We appreciate all of you. We know how lucky we are to get to broadcast our voices to the whole area listening to us and yeah, and talk about you know, the things that we think should be talked about. So thank you for letting us do this, and thank you for listening and your continued support. We still have 20 seconds left in this minute. Ren, anything to add?
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. We'll see you Thursday on the next episode of the Rocky Mountain Review.
I don't know what day it is.
Here on 90.5 KCSU, Fort Collins.